Hello, my name's Dave Emery. Welcome once again to our discussions of international fascism, elements of the U.S. national security establishment, and relations between same. What we're going to do this evening is to step back in time, and by way of underscoring the deep relationship between elements of the American industrial and financial elite and the powers of international fascism, we're going to discuss an incident which is has been forgotten, and which yet at the same time is very significant for the information that it has to yield about just how sympathetic many of our industrialists and financiers were to the powers of fascism, and beyond that, the extent to which the American political and legal systems were made to bend to the will of those pro-fascist industrialist financiers, as well as political and military figures, and some jurists as well. There is a miscellaneous archive show available from Archives on Audio called Uncle Sam and Il Duce, American Support for Mussolini and the Mythology of the Corporate State. In that particular program, I discuss a comparison between the American economy under Ronald Reagan and George Bush and Mussolini's corporate state in Italy. Beyond that, I also underscore the fact that not only was Mussolini propped up by American capital, but in turn, the American journalistic community covered up for the many drastic shortcomings of Mussolini's corporate state. What we're going to look at today is the ramifications of the American support for Mussolini for an Italian-American who was publishing an Italian-language newspaper in New York City for Italian-Americans. This newspaper, this publisher, was called Carlo Tresca, T-R-E-S-C-A, and he was the proprietor of a small paper in New York City called Il Martello, that's M-A-R-T-E-L-L-O. Il Martello was very critical of Mussolini, and at a dinner making a member of the board of directors of U.S. Steel an honorary fascisti, the Italian ambassador to the United States made it very clear that he did not think much of this newspaper and its criticism of Italy. And we're going to examine not only that, but we're going to examine what followed. We're going to examine the extraordinary treatment that was accorded Carlo Tresca and Il Martello. We're going to examine the ultimate putting out of business of Il Martello and the jailing of Carlo Tresca. This because his newspaper carried a two-line advertisement for a book on birth control. That advertisement had actually been placed by a fellow named Nieri, and he had operated in turn with the advertising agent for Il Martello, a fellow named Vella. Despite that, Carlo Tresca was given over a year in a federal penitentiary in Atlanta, now a notoriously harsh federal prison, probably much worse in the 1920s than it is now. Research credit on the following article goes to a listener. This particular article comes from a book called The Impossible H.L. Mencken, edited by Marion Elizabeth Rogers, R-O-D-G-E-R-S, and it was published by Anchor Books in New York City in 1991. What we're going to hear is a reading of an article entitled The Land of the Free. This article was written, of course, by the famous H.L. Mencken, social critic, and a very witty and acerbic one he was. H.L. Mencken wrote this particular article, The Land of the Free, for the Baltimore Sun, a major urban daily, obviously, on January 12th of 1925. So we're going to be jumping back a little over 70 years in time. The article, again, from the book The Impossible H.L. Mencken, edited by Marion Elizabeth Rogers, Anchor Books, New York City, copyright 1991. The article, The Land of the Free by H.L. Mencken, 112-25, Baltimore Sun. It reads, Carlo Tresca is the proprietor of a small Italian paper in New York by the name of Il Martello. He runs to liberal ideas, and when the fascisti came into power in his native country, he began Ku Kluxing their opponents. He denounced them in his paper and called upon the Italians in America to repudiate them. His articles were vigorously written and quickly attracted attention. A great many Italians began to incline toward his views. That was early in 1923. In July of the same year, certain persons in New York gave a public dinner to Judge Elbert H. Gary, G-A-R-Y, chairman of the board of directors of the United States Steel Corporation. Judge Gary, for his services to the cause of humanity in America, had been made an honorary member of the fascisti organization, and one of the guests who came to dinner to do him honor was Prince Gelesto Caetani, C-A-E-T-A-N-I, then and now the Italian ambassador in Washington, interrupting, of course, when the acerbic H.L. Mencken says that he was awarded, became an honorary member of the Fascisti because of his services to humanity. He's being sarcastic. Again, note, in the Miscellaneous Archive show, available from Archives on Audio, entitled Uncle Sam and Il Duce, the profound American capital and political and journalistic support for Mussolini is detailed, accessing the landmark work of George Seldes. Continuing with this article, The Land of the Free, by H.L. Mencken. Speaking of Prince Gaetani, he writes, Prince Gaetani, again interrupting the Italian ambassador to the United States, Prince Gaetani was naturally called upon to make a speech. He made one bitterly denouncing the opponents of fascismo among the American Italians and arguing that, quote, a certain Italian paper in New York, unquote, ought to be suppressed. The assembled apostles of human liberty knew that he meant Il Martello and applauded him heartily. That there was no law in the United States forbidding a newspaper to criticize a foreign government did not trouble them. They had been through the late war and knew what could be done. So did the Department of Justice, then still in command of the eminent Doherty, and the Post Office Department. Word was conveyed to Washington and then back to New York. On July 21st, the whole issue of Il Martello was held up in the mails. Tresca demanded to know why. The Post Office Department gave him no answer. He kept on denouncing the fascisti. 3 weeks later, on August 10th, he was suddenly arrested. The charge was that he had printed an article 3 months before attacking the Italian monarchy. No such crime, of course, is known to American law, but Tresca was nevertheless arrested. He got out on bail and kept on denouncing the fascisti. The charge was allowed to drop. On August 18th, the whole issue of Il Martello was held up because it contained an account of a raffle. Two other Italian papers, containing precisely the same account, went through the mails unmolested. On September 8th, it was held up because it contained a two-line advertisement of a book on birth control. On October 27th, it was held up because it printed an account of how the fascisti had forced an Italian woman to swallow an immense dose of castor oil. All the American newspapers printed the same story, but were not molested. On November 10th, it was held up because it printed a letter from a reader predicting that Mussolini would come to the same end as Rienzi, another failed Italian politician, or a previously failed Italian politician. Other papers had made the same prediction without challenge. On November 24th, it was held up for charging Mussolini with misappropriating funds. By the way, in the aforementioned Miscellaneous Archive show, Uncle Sam and Il Duce, the fiscal malfeasance of Mussolini and his government is detailed in considerable length. Continuing. Meanwhile, Tresca kept on denouncing the fascisti, and the Italian ambassador, it may be safely presumed, kept on nursing the conviction that Il Martello ought to be suppressed. The war, unfortunately, was over, and so it was not easy to accomplish the business. Holding up the paper day after day, and subjecting it to heavy and arbitrary losses, this was apparently easy, but it was impossible under the law to suppress it altogether, and very difficult to get Tresca into jail and keep him there. Finally, however, juridic science solved the problem. The little two-line advertisement on September 8th, announcing a book in Italian on birth control, showed the way. Experienced witch hunters from the Department of Justice were rushed to New York. Tresca was indicted for advertising a means of preventing conception, and his trial was called in hot haste. He appeared before Goddard J. in the United States District Court on November 27th. The evidence showed some strange things. Tresca, it appeared, had actually never sent a single copy of the offending issue through the mails. The instant he heard that the post office had held it up, he withdrew it and reprinted a new issue without the two-line advertisement. It appeared, indeed, that other charges were mixed up with the complaint. One was that he had printed an article entitled, Down with the Monarchy, unquote. This was plainly not illegal, but the prosecution made much of it. Finally, the assistant district attorney offered to drop the whole case if Tresca would leave the country, i.e. go back to Italy where the fascisti could deal with him. He refused and was convicted. Judge Goddard sentenced him to a year and a day at Atlanta. This was an appallingly heavy sentence, the heaviest ever heard of. In nearly all previous federal cases, the culprit had been simply fined. In none of the state cases had a sentence of more than 6 months been inflicted, and the average for all of them was less than a month. There was no evidence that Tresca had ever seen the advertisement before it had got into his paper. On the contrary, it was shown that the man who brought it in and inserted it was one Vela, the paper's advertising agent. The actual advertiser was one Nieri, N-I-E-R-I, an Italian bookseller. He, too, was arrested and convicted. He got 4 months in jail. But Tresca, who was only constructively guilty, got a year and a day in Atlanta prison. And there he sits now, for the Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld his conviction. Such episodes, and they are by no means rare, despite the common superstition that Palmerism has been squeezed out of the Department of Justice and Burlesonism out of the post office, give the student of American history powerfully to think. What becomes of the old notion that the United States is a free country, that it is a refuge for the oppressed of other lands, that here they may voice their grievances and call for help? There was a time when such rebels against tyranny came here as a matter of course and were received with open arms. The name of Kossuth, K-O-S-S-U-T-H, is even in the school books. But what would happen to a Kossuth today if the Hungarian ambassador could convince Judge Gary and company that he ought to be in jail? Also, what becomes of the old notion that a peaceable man in the Great Republic should be unmolested, that the Polizei should not pursue and harass him day and night and try by dodge after dodge to get him into their clutches? The post office tackled Tresca at least 5 times before it finally fetched him. Every one of those times, it must be obvious, he was innocent of any wrongdoing, else he would have been railroaded to jail forthwith. It took 6 shots to bring him down, and then he was caught on a childish technicality. Every American editor who prints any reference to a book on birth control, even if it be a review denouncing it, is quite as guilty as he was, and perhaps even more guilty, and consider his punishment. The man who offered the book for sale got 4 months. Tresca, for merely printing 2 lines about it, got a year and a day. I attempt no long sermon on the text. It is eloquent enough of itself. The facts, so far as I know, are not disputed by anyone. There was a time when their publication would have caused an uproar. Today, they go almost unnoticed. The great agencies of Americanism will let Tresca rot in prison before they lift their hands to help him, just as they are letting his fellow Italians Sacco and Vanzetti rot in prison. The American Legion, though it still sweats and moans for human liberty, will not protest. On the contrary, it is more likely to pass a resolution urging that the WAP be kept behind the bars, but guilty or not guilty. The Sons of the Revolution will maintain a magnificent silence. Kiwanis and Rotary will not be heard from. So far, indeed, but 8 persons in all the United States have gone to Tresca's aid. 4 are Italian-American politicians. 1 is a liberal pastor. 2 are old and battle-scarred libertarians, already marked with the scars of 100 defeats. The 8th is La Sanger, the birth control agitator, herself an experienced goat of the new jurisprudence. No one else will take any interest in the case. And again, that article entitled The Land of the Free is from the Baltimore Evening Sun of January 12, 1925, authored by H.L. Mencken, and from the book The Impossible H.L. Mencken, edited by Marion Elizabeth Rogers, published by Anchor Books, New York City, in 1991. Well, that is obviously a frightening tale, and one that has more than a little relevance for today. I would cite, for example, the program of terror that, if not actively supported by elements of the American political and legal establishments, were certainly allowed to proceed forward against Haitian refugees in the United States who were critical of the U.S.-backed junta in Haiti. That's but the latest example of something that is certainly analogous in certain respects, perhaps not precisely so, but analogous nonetheless, to what happened to poor Carlo Tresca. Let's take a minute to sum up what we looked at in this H.L. Mencken article, The Land of the Free. We started out by looking at Carlo Tresca, the editor of a small Italian paper in New York, or the owner, I should say, called Il Martello. He had been very critical of Mussolini's fascisti in Italy, and it apparently struck a responsive chord among Italian Americans in New York. In July of 1923, Judge Elbert H. Gary, the chairman of the board of directors of U.S. Steel, was made an honorary fascist by the Italian fascist government of Mussolini. There was a dinner to honor him on that particular evening. One of the guests at that particular dinner was the Italian ambassador to the United States, Prince Gelesto, or Gelesto, G-E-L-E-S-T-O, Caetani. We should remember, as we saw in Uncle Sam and Il Duce, the aforementioned miscellaneous archive show, that major American corporations supported Mussolini, not only because of his concept of the corporate state, which obviously was something they found to their liking, but also because American financial institutions provided the investment capital for Mussolini's Italy. There was corresponding journalistic sympathy and covering up for the inadequacies, and they were profound, of Mussolini's corporate state. We should note that in his speech at the dinner honoring Albert Gary and making him an honorary fascist, Prince Caetani referred very directly, although perhaps not by name, to Il Martello and argued that it should be suppressed. He was heartily applauded. Shortly thereafter, a series of misfortunes, and that's really the wrong word, a series of repressive acts were conducted, and not only that, not only repressive, but escalatingly repressive acts were launched against Carlo Tresca and his paper Il Martello. On August 10th of 1923, he was arrested on the charge of having printed an article that criticized the Italian monarchy. Well, obviously, there's nothing illegal about that. Nonetheless, Carlo Tresca was arrested for that. The newspaper was held up because on August 18th because it contained an account of a raffle. Two other Italian papers containing exactly the same account were not held up. On September 8th of 1923, Carlo Tresca's Il Martello was held up because it contained a two-line advertisement for a book on birth control. I'll remember that because that was ultimately the charge that he was jailed on. On October 27th, the post office held up Il Martello because it printed an account of the fascist punishing an Italian woman by forcing her to swallow an immense dose of castor oil. This despite the fact that many other American newspapers carried the same account and were not similarly attacked or held up. And then on November 10th of 23, it was held up because it printed a letter from a reader predicting that Mussolini would come to the same end as another failed Italian politician, Rienzi. Other papers made the same predictions and were not subject to retribution. And on November 24th, Il Tresca was held up, or Il Martello, rather, was held up for charging Mussolini with misappropriating funds. Well, Mussolini did misappropriate funds, as we saw in the aforementioned archive show, Uncle Sam and Il Duce. However, as George Seldes commented in his 1931 book, from which we borrowed, in the Uncle Sam and Il Duce program, in this time period, and to a certain extent still, one had to, quote, tell the truth and run. Actually, we use the book Can These Things Be? Another of Seldes' magnificent books was Tell the Truth and Run. But the sources used in Uncle Sam and Il Duce were George Seldes' Sawdust Caesar, his 1935 biography of Mussolini, and Can These Things Be? Published in 1931. We also quoted for a time from Mussolini's own book, The Corporate State, published in softcover by Velecki Publishers in 1937. Perhaps it was 38. I'd have to go back and check that. Or you can go back and check that directly from Uncle Sam and Il Duce. All of the repression that Il Martello was subjected to did not turn Carlo Tresca back. He kept on denouncing the fascisti, and so finally, the Justice Department indicted him for the advertisement, the two-line advertisement that for a book on contraception. I would also note that today, in 1995, 70 years after this H.L. Mencken article was printed, once again we are experiencing a war on reproductive rights in the United States. So, as William Faulkner said, the past is never dead and buried. It isn't even past. Note, too, that even though there was obviously nothing wrong with it, the Down with the Monarchy article that Carlo Tresca printed weighed very heavily in the ultimate decision by Judge Goddard to sentence him to a year and a day in a federal prison in Atlanta. I'm sure that was no picnic in 1925. I doubt it's a hell of a lot of fun today. Also note, too, that the person who actually placed that ad was Vela, the newspaper's, Il Martello's advertising agent. He got 4 months in jail. Nieri, an Italian bookseller who actually was the person who paid for the ad, was not convicted at all. Note also that Carlo Tresca went to prison without a great deal of public outcry. And again, I think this particular incident is something that we should note, not only because of the similarity between what happened in 1925 and some things going on today. For example, the murders of Haitian critics of the recently deposed junta. Those have not been investigated properly in the United States. It appears unlikely that the Haitian junta could have committed those murders, or agents of the Haitian junta could have committed those murders without the knowledge of, at least the acquiescence of, some American officials. I'm not accusing most or even all of acquiescence in such a thing. But again, as we evaluate fascism, what it is, where it came from, who supported it, and what we have reason to expect in the future, I think the frightening degree to which Italian fascism and the political and corporate and legal interests that supported it in the United States were able to suppress Carlo Tresca and Il Martello is of great, great relevance. Now, I made reference to the archive shows. Those are a form of radio documentary that I've put together over the years in which printed sources are read on the air, literally extracted on the air, so the listeners can use the resulting tapes as an audio study resource. All of those archive shows are on permanent file with a tape duplication service. That tape duplication service is as follows.
Tape cassettes of Dave Emery's archive documentaries and weekly One Step Beyond programs are available from a tape duplication service. The service is archives on audio, and you can contact them at Post Office Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. Once again, that's P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number and area code are 415-346-1840. A 12-page catalog listing and describing each archive show is available.
And neither myself nor the station makes money out of this arrangement. By the way, the home base station on which I record these programs, or at which I record these programs, KFJC-FM in Northern California, has its own page on the World Wide Web. All of the descriptions of the aforementioned archive shows and cross-references made between those programs and other broadcasts containing similar or related material are available on the KFJC webpage. In addition, there's a suggested reading list and a recommendation of other sources, other information sources for information in this particular field. In order to access the KFJC webpage, those of you who have access to the World Wide Web, you're going to want to dial up http://www.cygnus.com/KFJC/. Once again, the KFJC website is at http://www.cygnus.com/KFJC/. That for the KFJC webpage. There is a new book service called Antifa Book Service, which specializes in titles, often rare and out-of-print titles, in this particular field of research. Those of you who would like to go directly to the horse's mouth, so to speak, can access many of the source materials from the aforementioned archive show, Uncle Sam and Il Duce, by contacting Antifa Book Service. That's A-N-T-I-F-A, A-N-T-I-F-A Book Service. They are at post. They are at 945 Taravale Street, T-A-R-A-V-A-L Street in San Francisco. That's number 117, zip code 94116. Once again, Antifa Book Service. That is at 945 Taravale Street, T-A-R-A-V-A-L Street. In San Francisco, California, oh, that's Taravale Street number 117, San Francisco, California, 94116. Again, 945 Taravale Street, number 117, San Francisco, California, 94116 for Antifa Book Service, an excellent source for titles in this particular area of research. That concludes this particular segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.